You are listening to the Streets MN Podcast, a place where conversations about Minnesota's transportation and land use are expanded through research and informed commentary.
Hi, this is Bill Indicky. Welcome to the Streets.MN Podcast. This week, I have for you episode 115, Ramsey County's 3rd District with Trista Matas-Castillo. It's another in the long line of interviews with candidates for public office that I've been doing over the years. Longtime listeners would remember, for example, 5 years ago when I interviewed lots of city council candidates running in Minneapolis. I've also interviewed city council candidates in St. Paul, mayoral candidates in other cities like West St. Paul, Columbia Heights, and Newport, and county commissioner candidates in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. So that's the idea. The general goal of my election coverage is to talk to people who aren't running for high-profile offices. So not generally people who are in the paper, but rather the down-ticket elections, folks who might not get a lot of attention or chances to talk about their campaigns and platforms in the mainstream press. Today's candidate is Trista Matas-Castillo, and she's running for Ramsey County Commissioner in the 3rd District of Ramsey County. Okay, where is that? Well, it covers a big chunk of the northern neighborhoods of St. Paul, all the way from places like Como to the east side, to Rice Street North End, including Falcon Heights. And so it's a very large area of St. Paul and Falcon Heights, and it's really important. I used to live there. I liked it. It's a place with a lot of poverty and diversity and opportunity where a county commissioner can make a big difference. And one of the things about county commissioners that I've noticed is that most people can't even name one of their county commissioners, might not even know they have one. And yet, these county governments do a ton of work to help people and make incredibly important transportation decisions in our cities and in our towns. So that's the idea here. I sat down with Trista in her campaign office on Rice Street the other day. We chatted about her background, what Ramsey County does, transportation issues like, for example, Rice Street, which was right outside the window, and other county issues that she's focusing on in her campaign this summer. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the Streets.MN podcast. Trista Matas-Castillo. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That was perfect.
Oh, good. Good. That's a first on this podcast that I've ever done that right. but yeah, we're here on your office, and you are running for Ramsey County Commissioner in St. Paul.
Yes. District 3.
District 3.
Which also includes Falcon Heights.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know a little bit about what a Ramsey County Commissioner is, because probably people don't know.
Yeah.
And then maybe tell me about yourself as well.
Sure. So a Ramsey County Commissioner, I like to tell people, County Commissioner is the most important level of government that no one knows about. And so, you know, we take care of everything in your day-to-day life except the two G's, which are guns and gynecology. So we don't do any regulation there. But, you know, everything else in the county. And Ramsey County's budget is about $720 million.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And so the county commissioners really, you know, determined how, you know, what is the county's budget, where the resources we have go, and how they're spent, and really covers everything. So roads and bridges, public libraries, you're voting mostly in public health and health and human services, our sheriff's department's budget, corrections, and a whole host of other things.
Okay, this is a quiz. I didn't warn you about it, but can you tell where there's 7 county commissioners or 7 members of the county board? I don't know which term is better, but probably they're the same.
Yes.
And then what are the boundaries of District 3?
Yeah, so this is easy. Oh. So it's pretty much, I mean, roughly, there's a few little carve-outs, but generally speaking, it's everything north of University between Edgerton and Snelling Avenues. So think that the Hart Frogtown, parts of the east side, the north end, Hammond Midway, Como, and then also includes the city of Falcon Heights. So it's everything between University and Larpinder, from Edgerton to Snelling and Falcon Heights.
Just thinking about that area, it seems like an area with a lot of poverty.
It is. In fact, 56% of our residents live below the poverty line. And so, and we're also a district that has significantly more children than adults. So if we're thinking about how we're spending money and using use resources, we need to really take into our population and what the needs of the community really are.
And so that's a little bit about Ramsey County and the commission and the board or whatever. Yes. $722 million a year, and that's a lot to try to address a lot of problems that are really big. But what are you, who are you, and why are you doing, why are you running for this office?
Yeah, you know, so I come to this office from a place of experience, and that's personal experience. So I'm a mom. I have five children. I live here.
That's a lot of children.
It's a lot of children, yes. And they're all sons. So, you know, you can tell that I kept going because I was determined to have a daughter, but just wasn't going to happen for me. But I'm raising five very strong feminist young men, so it's good. But I live on the east side, and I've been there for 15 years. And what brought me to the east side really was that I was on active duty. I was a Marine on September 11th. And on that day, when everyone remembers exactly where they were when September 11th happened, I was actually in a doctor's office with my two-year-old son and receiving the diagnosis that would change my career and our lives forever. And Hunter was diagnosed severely autistic and developmentally delayed. And I remember the doctor saying to me, this might be as good as it's ever going to get at that moment. And simultaneously, the terrorists were attacking our country, right? And the second plane is hitting the Twin Towers. And I remember looking down at my Marine uniform and thinking, I know how to defend my country. I don't know how to raise a disabled child. And so when you have a diagnosis like that, you are forced to turn to the county for services. There are mandates that you have to have social workers, and you're in the system automatically based on his diagnosis. And so I've had to navigate that system for the last 17 years and really think about like how it interacts. And I am smart and educated, and I come from a place of privilege, right, as a white person in our neighborhoods. And I think about when I access the county services, they are horrendous. They're very difficult. It's complicated. It's confusing. And now you layer that on the fatigue of a parent raising a disabled child, the confusion, the amount of paperwork that has to happen. And it's a very difficult system to navigate that I am sure we can fix. And I come from that from a place of experience. So I can relate to people who have to access county services. We know that when people go to the county for help, something in their life isn't going well. No one is going there to take advantage of the system, despite what, you know, we have rumors or the once in a while we hear of someone who has done something wrong. But most people are turning to the county because they actually need help and resources. And I want to deliver those services better so that Ramsey County works for all of us.
Yeah, I think of my own experience sort of trying to get help with health insurance, for example.
Yes.
And it's just really hard. It's not always hard, but just filling out paperwork, I hate doing it.
Yes.
And I've got a PhD, and so right. It's like, if I find it difficult, how does someone who have 20 years of education
or doesn't speak the language or is overwhelmed by other issues?
Yeah,
it's a complicated. The other thing that is, you know, kind of frustrating for me is that, you know, we think that people have to prove that they need help. And I think that if someone is walking in the door and asking for help, it takes a lot of courage to ask for help. And so if someone is walking in the door and asking for help, we should default in believing them. And that is on anything, right? Mm-hmm. But you kind of feel it's humiliating when you have to ask for help at times. It can feel degrading. The system, you know, no matter what your reason for being there, everyone's kind of put in the same lineup. I recently had an experience in court because when you have a disabled child who becomes an adult, you have to seek guardianship. And so I had to go through the court system in order to get guardianship. And so, you know, you're going through the metal detector. It's in the same courtroom that, you know, criminal activity is happening. And they put all these families into the room, and you hear everyone's personal stories while you're getting guardianship. And it can feel really overwhelming, and that you're on the spotlight. And the other part that is maybe even more disturbing is that when you're getting guardianship of a handicapped or disabled person, they're in probate court. So the same, you know, in the room are people fighting over their uncle's boat that he didn't put in their will, and I'm getting guardianship of a human being in the same court.
The only time I've been in court was to defend a bicycle ticket that I got once for going through a red light and But anyway, yeah. It was still kind of a circus.
Yeah, and it feels like it's kind of scary, especially if you have been there before, maybe, and not had a great experience, or if you've never been there, it can be scary and intimidating, and it's very formal. And so it's all part of the system that I really want to address. And I know that's not what we're here to chat with on Streets MM, but it's really important. And those are kind of the things that I think people don't realize, that that's all county services.
Yeah. I just remembered the foyer of the Ramsey County Government Services Building on Kellogg, and it being, you just really see people with all these different languages that are there, and coming from all sorts of different parts of our society, you know, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's just a challenging situation.
Absolutely. It's difficult. It's difficult to navigate, and it's scary. I mean, the building isn't all that warm and friendly to begin with, right?
The pigeon flock I've written about before. Yes. But I want to know more about your history and what qualifications you're bringing to the office.
Yeah.
Why, your story about your child is really compelling, but like, what do you do? You
know, right.
What,
yeah.
You're a Marine?
I was a Marine.
Once a Marine, always a Marine?
Yes, exactly. So I served 16 years total on active duty in the military.
Wow. What kind of duty? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I have a unique history and story in that I started off enlisted in the Navy, and I was fixing F-18s. So I did avionics. I was an avionics technician. After about 7.5 years in the Navy, I was selected to become an officer, so into an officer program. And I decided in that time that if I was going to be an officer, I should be a Marine Corps officer. And so I went through OCS in the Marine Corps.
OCS?
Officer Candidate School, cool. Yes. Lots of acronyms.
Were you on like an aircraft carrier?
No, I was.
F-18s, aren't they like?
They are on aircraft carrier. When I was in the Navy, it was funny. I joined the Navy to see the world, and I got stationed in the middle of California in the desert.
Okay.
Not even close to water.
Bakersfield or
something?
Yeah,
it was Lemoore, California. Oh. So about 5 hours north of Bakersfield. Oh. But yeah, so I was, you know, the military doesn't always have bases in all the pretty places. So I was in the desert where there's no noise ordinances, so F-18s can fly any time of the day.
Okay.
And then I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps, and then in conjunction with Hunter's diagnosis about that same time, the Marine Corps and I parted ways in that, you know, I was a single mom with a handicapped child, and so they gave me a hardship discharge, and I joined the Army, so...
Because that's like almost all the branches.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So I spent then the last 6 years in the as an active guard and reserve soldier here in Minnesota. So I was an Army officer.
Great. And now you work at the county
commission. I actually don't currently. So I after I left the military, I spent 10 years working on affordable housing issues. I was a lobbyist for Habitat for Humanity in the Twin Cities.
Oh, okay.
Started Homes for All Coalition and really worked hard on that. I've spent a lot of time working on mental health issues, veterans issues, and equality issues, and really just kind of moving community together and how do we work together in ways so that we all have the resources we need. And then I went to work at the county, as you mentioned. So I spent a year working as an aide to one of the other commissioners and really learning the role of the county commissioner, which just solidified for me that this is definitely the job I want to be in. You know, you sit in the back row and you watch meetings and you hear it, and it really for me was something I've been interested in for a long time, but it was that moment of, okay, it's time for me to take a seat at the table, and now I know why District 3 hasn't gotten the resources that we deserve. And so
that's a good segue, because we're sitting in your office here on Rice Street, and this is my old neighborhood, and maybe 7 years ago I would have been able to vote for you. No, 5 years ago, because I lived in this area for quite a while. And Rice Street it brings together two of the big challenges, I think, and things in your campaign, which is transportation and some reforms around how we make our streets and how the county does that, because this is a county street.
It is a county
road. Then the other one is economic development, because this is a really sort of struggling area.
Yeah. In fact, the North End is one of the most impoverished neighborhoods in our entire state.
Yeah. And there's a lot of great assets here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's also in the history and beautiful buildings that need a little love.
Yes.
And then we're sitting in like a new building, right? This
right.
is like a building that was built maybe 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yes.
And in the retail, so you're in a storefront that hasn't been rented for a while.
It's never been rented. We're the first occupants since the building was built.
Yeah. So yeah. that kind of is in a nutshell Rice Street in
yes.
some ways, you know.
Absolutely.
So talk to me about Rice Street and what's going on and why the county plays a big role and what you'd like to do.
Yeah. So Rice Street is really a connector, right? Right now it's the way, you know, we're looking out the window and we see the traffic, even though the speed limit is 30 miles an hour, people are flying past our window. But Rice Street really connects our capital, right? So it ends right on the north side of the state capital and all the way north, right to 694. So it connects all the way through Ramsey County. And a lot of times people use this as their, you know, cut across, when especially when traffic on 35E, the freeway is busy. So they'll cut over on Rice Street and use it as a kind of traffic stop. The problem with that is that we have people driving through so fast and we've got four lanes and almost no parking because we've removed parking significantly, especially during high traffic times. But this is a residential area. So there are both businesses, but also residents. And we have three schools along Rice Street between 694 and the Capitol. And so we're having people drive very fast in front of elementary schools, which is dangerous, and a high school, which is very dangerous. And so it's an opportunity to slow traffic down and kind of return a main street to the north end to help businesses grow and for people to thrive. And, you know, it still addresses, you know, moves traffic. 35E is just a few blocks away. If you want to drive fast, you can certainly go down the freeway. But it's an opportunity to think about how do we reinvest? How do we change the culture of driving down Rice Street so that our businesses can thrive and people who live here can be safe? And we make it a more walkable community.
I have to ask you, has that been easy conversation to have with folks? Is that something, I think for me, the connection between speed and businesses, local businesses thriving is sort of really clear because I've been thinking about it and I come up with an opinion that's
right.
to me very firm, but I don't know if everyone sees eye to eye on that.
Well, people don't see eye to eye. I think that what happens is we have a culture of fear, and fear is in change. And so we have seen Rice Street this way for about 20 years, but it hasn't always been this way, right? So if we go back in history, it was slow and people walked and businesses thrived. But we have had this, you know, this kind of speed. We've redesigned our city to accommodate cars, and we almost pretend like people don't walk anywhere or ride bikes, and we need to get back to that. And sometimes people are challenged by it, right? They don't want change, but in the very same breath, they will complain about accidents. They will talk about how they can't cross the road at an intersection. They'll talk about how people are zigzagging in and around cars very fast at times of the day, and that their businesses are suffering. So it is a both and. And so I hear that. I hear that pushback. And I also see where we do have common ground, and that is the desire for development, the desire for investment into our area, and really to be paid attention. But what I am finding, you know, knowing this neighborhood the way I do and knocking doors, is that the angry people are the loud people, but people who really are hopeful and want the change are quietly supporting in the background, and they far outweigh the vocal, loud, negative voice.
So how do you feel? I'm thinking about the corner of Rice and Maryland, right?
Yes.
Which is really close to where I used to live. And it still is today, just a very hostile environment if you're
yes.
standing on the corner there.
Yes.
Everyone's speeding around and honking around, and there's crashes every 3 days, maybe.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very unpleasant, even though all around you are really cool businesses like Kathy's
yes.
Live Bait or a couple nice bars and restaurants.
Right.
And even the gas station, which I know they got in a lawsuit with the city, but I like that gas station. But so anyway, I just think there's a lot of promise, you know, in the
yes.
area and from a broad, diverse group backgrounds.
Like, exactly.
But it's just really tough when you see the streets that are not supporting that, and those are county roads, and it's been that way for a long time. So
absolutely, and you know, it really is. You know, we have a couple things going on in the North End that, you know, I have to also mention, is that we also have a high crime rate.
Yeah,
and I don't think that they're two separate issues, but that they're actually related. So that we have created a long time culture of, this is a super highway, essentially, in the residential business area. We have not invested in our community, which sends a loud message to the people who live here, is that they're not valued in the way other parts of our county are. And so for me, they're not mutually exclusive, but they are actually very much tied together. And so that intersection that you mentioned, Rice and Maryland, often has crime. We've had a rise in shootings and gun violence, that stuff as well. And I think that if we significantly change the culture of our driving, of enforcement of our driving, and that we bring people outside so that we're not isolating, right? People stay inside their houses, or they stay inside their cars and want to just get through as fast as possible, which also allows crime to happen and crime to rise. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important that we also address that. But you're absolutely right. We have really great businesses, and our greatest resources, whether it's here in the North End or in Frogtown or any other of the communities across District 3, is our human capital. We have intense diversity and richness in culture and the kind of liveliness of the people. And so we need to show them that we value that by investing in their neighborhoods.
Yeah. What do you think about the Maryland Avenue road diet thing? So I had Jim McDonough, yes, another county commissioner, on a little while ago on a podcast here to talk about that. And it was interesting. And some of the, it's called the, like, what is it called? All Abilities Network.
All Abilities,
yeah.
Yes.
Do you know about that
I
whole
do.
Thing? Can you explain it real quick?
Yeah, I do. So the All Abilities Transit Plan is really redesigning our roads for all abilities. And that means that we are taking care of seniors who need to walk across the road to use it. We're talking about people who might be disabled or in wheelchairs, but we're also talking about walkers, bikers, and cars. And so really thinking about, how do we build our roads so that all of those users of our network can use them, right? A great example is, so we're sitting across the street from an apartment building that is the only 100% disabledly designed building. So in the building across the street,
there
has a giant wheelchair ramp from the bottom floor to the top floor, if you think about, and the whole building is built around that. And every unit is handicap accessible. What's interesting about it is, and it's full of folks with different abilities and disabilities, but there's no direct crosswalk even to get from that building. So residents have to go a couple blocks north to go to the crosswalk to come to this side of the road. And so I think about, like, the poor design of our streets there, is that they can't come out and immediately cross the road. And definitely not safely when people are driving very fast and there's four lanes of traffic. So even if one driver stops at the intersection as they're supposed to, someone will, without even looking, will, you know, kind of zip around them.
Yeah.
Right?
I had that happened to me. I have a story about it, actually. There's a library up here.
Yes.
Rice Street Library.
Yes.
And I'm like going, I went to a taco truck up on my bicycle, and actually it wasn't a taco, but whatever. And I get this food, and then I'm going back to my bicycle on the other side of Rice Street.
Yeah.
And one car stops for me, and then another one doesn't. And then there's a police officer behind them.
Yes.
And they stop, and the guy comes on his speaker. He says, "Don't worry, we'll get them," you know, as if like the officer is going to go and, you know, give a ticket to the person who went around, which they did not. But I just thought it was funny, the optimism of the police. Like,
yes,
they're trying to do the right thing.
They are, definitely.
But the design of the road,
the design
really
of
help.
The road makes it very difficult. So getting back to your question about the Maryland Avenue road diet. So I live, I actually live on the east side, and I'm just north of Maryland Avenue. And I'm on the part that didn't get the road diet, where I see crashes almost every single day there on Maryland Avenue. As you kind of come down the hill from Edgerton, there are crashes. It's very wide. And earlier this spring, when we still had snow piles on the side of the road, which also narrowed the lanes, I was sideswiped on Maryland Avenue in Jackson, causing about $2,000 damage to my car because someone's trying to use all four lanes, but really it's not wide enough for four lanes. Luckily, no one was seriously hurt, but it could have gone very badly. He ended up losing control control of his vehicle, drove up on the curb and ultimately down through Sylvan Park. So thank goodness it was winter and no one was occupying that park. But I think about when there's other times when that could have been very different. And so I know there was a lot of resistance to the Maryland Avenue road diet and narrowing those lanes. But as someone who uses Maryland Avenue frequently, my commute is actually gotten quicker, that the road is safer and people aren't driving crazy around me. And I can get to where I'm going when I'm heading east on the road diet better than I could before when it was four lanes. So I would actually like to see that extended all the way west throughout District 3 as well.
Yeah, my conservative east side cousin initially did not like that project, but now he's like, oh, it's not so bad actually, is what he says. So anyway, it's just kind of funny. I think if once you try something, it doesn't turn out to be as bad as people thought.
Exactly.
Some of the other topics I wanted to talk to you about today were, let's see, the food desert idea.
Yeah.
So this is one of your things you're championing, and also sort of, this is somewhat connected, but homelessness and homelessness problems in St. Paul, which I think are becoming more acute, and people are thinking about them more.
Absolutely.
And the county plays a big role in that. So maybe we could touch on both of those.
Absolutely. So a couple things that come to mind is that we have a significant issue of poverty, as well as a lack of resources for fresh food in throughout Ramsey County, especially in District 3. I have been a volunteer at the Frogtown Food Justice Program, where they have a pop-up food distribution on Fridays throughout Frogtown and all summer long, and they actually buy produce from the Frogtown Farms and distribute to community members.
So just once, Frogtown Farms is this old giant site that a nonprofit owned, and then they sold it and are doing urban agriculture?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a nonprofit community organization that is distributing a lot of food, fresh produce all summer long, and engaging people as well as teaching people how to grow their own fresh produce. And it is a great example, especially in the winter months when we don't have the opportunity to have fresh produce. I was working with the Frogtown organization with their food distribution, and we would have on average 300 to 400 people every Friday coming in for food. And as I talked to folks in the line, they would talk to me because I would make fresh soup. So while they were waiting in line, I would give them the soup I had made. I made different soup every week, but I found that the chicken wild rice was always the biggest hit.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, it turns out some of our new immigrants don't like chili, so the chili didn't go over so well. But chicken wild rice was a big hit. But I would talk to them, and they would say, you know, many of them would say, we haven't eaten, you know, since last week's food distribution. You know, we ration our food, and we run out of food by Wednesday. I talked to seniors who are on such a fixed income that they had gotten to a point that they were eating cat food before the food distribution started, which to me is, it's a real problem. You know, we talk about, you know, food programs and helping folks, but we really don't have access for the most part throughout the district for fresh produce. And so one of the ideas that I've been thinking about is, how as a county can we do better? We should not have hungry or homeless people in the United States of America, definitely not in Ramsey County. And that's really important to me. And so, as I was sitting at the county board meeting last spring around a proposal to increase additional funding to golf courses in Ramsey County, I kind of had this idea. So we have 5 municipal golf courses in Ramsey County, all of which are operating at a profit loss, a significant profit loss. And the county supplements our golf courses to the tune of millions of dollars that we've invested in our golf courses on something that's losing money. And so have really thought about, is there an opportunity to maybe repurpose even just one of those golf courses into an urban farm that then could provide produce? And so I've done some math. I've done my homework. I've, you know, it might be controversial because golfers don't want to lose their golf courses, but I'm not talking about closing them all. I'm just saying, let's choose one and return it to an urban farm. And here are the wins. It actually would produce enough produce, one golf course, to supply every St. Paul Public School with produce, every senior center, and every homeless shelter with fresh produce. Just one golf course. The other thing it would do is that we use a lot of chemicals on our golf courses to keep them green. So we're poisoning our own water system, that within 45 minutes, each of those chemicals are in our aquifers. So it would improve our water quality. We would be able to grow fresh produce, and we can turn it into a jobs and education program. With the same money we already have, right? So it could grow revenue, it can teach people, it can fix our environment, and provide the food that we need just with one golf
course.
Can
I throw in some affordable housing on the golf course edge? Maybe just around the edge, you know, also?
Yes.
Depends on which one you're talking about, but...
Right. Well, so... You know, this is when we get to this, when we add all of these different things and people start saying, well, we can't do it, right? So we have also a need for affordable housing, absolutely. But we also need, we just have a need for all housing, mm-hmm. not just affordable housing, yeah. right? So at the entire continuum, we do not have enough housing options. And so really then thinking about how do we build a housing plan that is more density, that provides more options, but isn't just like one unit that's all affordable, for instance. We need to have mixed incomes, mixed use in every one of the units that we're building so that we're not concentrating poverty, but that we're giving people options. And, you know, for me, the golf courses maintains green space, so the housing that's already there doesn't lose their value. It may actually increase their value. But then there's other sites where we're either tearing down old existing housing because it's not in good condition that we could say, you know what, this site could actually have a fourplex or a duplex. And we need to build housing that is also accommodates our aging in place model, right? We are working really hard at keeping seniors in their homes longer. But if you look around St. Paul, not many of them are accessible and adaptable for when we age and we can no longer navigate stairs. We have lots of houses where the bathroom is on the second floor, and we think, well, how do we manage that for seniors who might not be able to use the stairs?
Yeah, actually, so one of the sponsors of this podcast mm-hmm. that I recently got, I'm really happy about it, is a realtor friend of mine, Nate Pence, Pence Homes Realty. But he, the first episode where I had Nate come on and talk about the housing market, like 2 days later, my mom calls me and is like, oh, I heard your podcast. Now I want to sell my house and move into a more walkable area.
Wow. Your mom's listening. That's great.
Yeah. yeah. I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay.
Win.
So it's just funny, but yeah. it's what you're talking about. And yes. now she's looking around at sort of housing for, she's not, she doesn't have super needs or anything,
right.
but she doesn't want to mow the lawn anymore. She's
right.
in her 70s.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And it's kind of hard to find a spot.
It is very difficult.
It'll probably be in your ward. Your
yeah,
district,
that'd so. Be great. We're happy to have her.
yeah.
Yeah, it's very difficult. The other thing is that we also don't have housing options that are culturally relevant either. So we have a tremendous here, especially in the North End, this great immigrant population of the Karen families who
Can
don't
you explain
want...
where they're from? Like what group?
Yeah, so...
People probably don't know.
Yeah, so they're, we have... 7,000 Karen families here in St. Paul. I think there's 20,000 now in the United States. My numbers might be off. It's growing very quickly. But they are refugees that are coming from Thailand and Burma that have been through refugee camps because of military and political unrest significantly in their area. And so now they've resettled here. And it's a great, tremendous gain for us as a community and as a state, but housing has become a significant problem. And culturally, you know, our white colonized way is our kids turn 18 and we're ready to boot them out and go find your own place. But that is not the norm for many cultures. And in fact, they want to stay together because their family unit is so critical and important. And I think, you know, we're even seeing that as our kids are going off to college, there's nothing affordable. So they're coming home anyway.
Yeah, that's actually becoming more normal.
Right.
For,
now it's normal,
everyone.
Right? And so now, but then we have to think about how does our housing accommodate that? So is it more duplexes? duplexes? Is it up-down duplex? Is it modular building? So maybe it's a family owns a lot and they live on one level, but that we're thinking of construction that you can add the second floor, right, as a child gets married and they move their family, right? And so it's thinking a little bit out of the box, but also thinking is how do we accommodate and have a really great system that we're taking into all those aspects and partnering with organizations and say, yeah, I want to hear what you're thinking. We can try a different design or usage, or that we can encourage building of affordable housing and the entire continuum of housing here in St. Paul.
I like that you mentioned the entire continuum of housing also, because there's a real lack of market rate housing in your ward, in your district, also in St. Paul. So let's talk, it's sort of a segue, but let's talk about the homelessness issue and what the county can do.
Yes.
Because it's connected to housing. Home and a housing is the same word, really.
Yes, yes. So, you know, I really believe that we have to first get people settled into housing, because everything else is built off of that, right? If you don't know where you're going to sleep tonight or where when you're going to have food in your belly, you can't think about anything else. And it's the fact that we have homeless folks here in Ramsey County or anywhere in Minnesota is really it's really troublesome for me, and it's something that I work very hard. I'm currently working for Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, really addressing the homeless veterans issue and how do we, you know, create affordability. And I'll tell you that many of the homeless folks we're working with are employed. They're not unemployed. It isn't this, you know, myth of, you know, they're just sitting around waiting for a handout at all. Many of them are working hard. They have families, but there isn't an affordability factor. And then even when we have affordable housing, we're not looking at people who are below the 30% AMI, which we're seeing pretty significant amounts as well.
And that's the housing that's disappearing super fast.
Super fast. It almost doesn't exist, especially if it's a single person who's just looking for an efficiency, or maybe a couple or a parent and a child situation. We don't have those small efficiency units anymore that are affordable. We don't have housing for low-income families. And so really thinking about how we do that. But the county services directly, right? We have a outreach program for homeless folks that can come in and get resources. And they try to identify locations, but there just isn't enough. So we do temporary shelters, in partnership with the county and the city, right, for resources. And though we're making an effort, we need to make it a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's just a lot we can do to make sure that we're, you know, addressing housing vouchers, that we're building, and maybe that we're building more specific for other income levels, and that we're putting that as a priority.
Can the county even accomplish some of that stuff?
Well, so there's some ways about it. So it's interesting in the city of St. Paul. The city of St. Paul has the Housing Redevelopment Authority that works within the city, and the county's housing redevelopment currently is outside their jurisdiction. It's outside the city of St. Paul. And so thinking about how do we make the county an economic development authority, and as opposed to just a housing redevelopment authority, and that we can invest and work closer together with the folks at the city of St. Paul to accomplish. There's definitely a way that we can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Trista. Yeah. What are you doing for the rest of the day or the month?
I
guess, is there a primary?
There is a primary. Oh. So we are going to a primary on August 14th, and our campaign is running really hard. And we have been out door knocking and phone banking and working hard since October of last year when we announced. We have earned the DFL endorsement. We have earned the endorsement of many labor unions and organizations that we're really proud of. Our newest one is the St. Paul Federation of Teachers. We've been endorsed by the Teamsters and the Carpenters and IBEW and many other labor unions. DFL and the Disability Caucus are working very closely with us. And so we are door knocking, we are calling, we are everywhere, and we're working really hard also with other candidates up and down the ticket to get the word out, because we want to demonstrate our values and demonstrate that good government works together at every level, and that would be new for District 3 to have a county commissioner who is working well with others to bring resources into District 3.
Yeah, it's really nice to talk to you, and I think you have a very positive attitude about Rice Street and about the North End and about St. Paul's future, which is is a nice change of pace.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Streets MN podcast. If you are interested in joining the conversation about Minnesota's transportation and land use, direct your browser to streets.mn. Content for Streets MN is volunteer-driven, and the views reflected on